Hello, this is Miss Dell with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, April 27th, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Flag Football Flying at IWU. Women's Team Finding Its Footing in Inaugural Season. Bloomington. On a practice field at Illinois Wesleyan University, something new is taking shape. There are no banners, no alumni legacy, no established culture. Instead, in its inaugural season, IWU, Women's Flag Football Program, is being built from the ground up by first-year players in a new coaching staff and a vision that extends beyond the field. For freshmen like Lily Greenfield and Emma Caniglia, joining the program meant stepping into the unknown. It's not easy, Greenfield said. You're figuring out school, meeting new people, and at the same time building a team culture from scratch. But it's been really fun. Because nearly the entire roster is made up of freshmen, leadership isn't inherited. It's developed in real time. We all had to step up, said Caniglia, the team's quarterback. Everyone had to take on a leadership role. At first, it was an adjustment, but now it feels like home. That shared experience has accelerated the team's growth both on and off the field, their coaches said. At the center of the program is head coach Melissa Valenzuela, whose background reflects the growth of flag football as a sport. She was hired in December 2024, bringing more than a decade of experience in both flag and tackle football. Before arriving at Wesleyan, she coached flag football at the high school level in Portland and worked as a defensive backs coach with the Oregon Ravens of the Women's National Football Conference. Valenzuela has also coached youth, co-ed adult, and women's semi-contact flag football teams since 2011, and she helped grow the sport in the Pacific Northwest, including co-creating one of the first 5-on-5 women's flag leagues in Seattle. Though for Valenzuela, the job is about more than experience, it's about impact. I wanted to find good humans, she said. Players who are motivated and coachable, because with the new sport, development is going to come with time. The timing of Wesleyan's program aligns with the national surge in interest. Flag football is now an emerging sport for women in the NCAA and is set to debut in the 2028 Summer Olympics. High schools across Illinois, including in Bloomington, District 87, and McLean County, Unit 5, are beginning to add it to their athletic programs, creating a pipeline that didn't exist even a few years ago. For the IWU athletic director Mike Wagner, that growth made the decision to launch the flag football program even clearer. It's about giving women the opportunity to compete, earn a degree, and grow as people, Wagner said. But we also want to build something that can complete at a high level. Still, building a program from scratch comes with its challenges. Everything is first right now, he said. There are going to be bumps, but that's part of building something new. Valenzuela's philosophy emphasizes culture before results. Her team volunteers in the community, helping to introduce younger athletes to the sport while reinforcing a sense of purpose. It isn't just about playing, she said. It's about giving back and growing the game. That mindset has translated into a close-knit locker room. If someone is having a tough day, we pick each other up, Greenfield said. For a group of players who barely knew each other months ago, the bond came quickly. At first, we were all competing for sports, Caniglia said. But once we started playing together, we really came together. Because flag football is still emerging, many players didn't grow up playing or specializing in it. Caniglia played volleyball, softball, and basketball in high school, serving as team captain in multiple sports. That experience now shapes her roles as a quarterback. I learned how to lead and communicate, she said. That's huge when you're running the offense. Greenfield began playing flag football in her senior year of high school. But even with a late start, she said players shouldn't be afraid to try something new. You don't have to start when you're really young, she said. If you work hard and believe in yourself, you can do it. On the field, development is constant. Practices include early morning weightlifting, near daily training sessions, and film study, but just as important is adaptability. I challenge them, Valenzuela said. Sometimes you don't know your strengths until someone pushed you. The life doesn't always go as planned. You have to learn how to respond. For players like Caniglia, the preparation is as much mental as physical. I like being around my teammates before games, she said. It helps me stay relaxed and not overthink. With no past to define them, Wesleyan players are shaping the future of the program and the sport itself. It's surreal, Caniglia said. The sport is growing so fast, and to be a part of it is really special. Greenfield sees that growth as something bigger than wins and losses. Younger girls are going to have opportunities we didn't have, she said. For Valenzuela, the long-term goals aren't just championships. This sport changed my life, she said. If I can help even one player take something meaningful from it, then I've done my job. Wagner shares that perspective. If we can leave this program and this world better than we found it, then we've done what we were supposed to do, he said. And for players like Caniglia, the legacy is already taking shape. I wanted to be remembered as someone who worked hard and supported for my teammates, she said, and someone who helped open the door for others. The Titans will close out their inaugural season this weekend with a doubleheader against North Park University, with the first game set for 1 p.m. Saturday at Tucci Stadium. Our next front page article, Trump hatred drove shooter. He said sick guy had anti-Christian writing. Washington. President Donald Trump said Sunday that the suspect accused of trying to attack administration officials at Saturday night's White House Correspondents Association dinner had an anti-Christian manifesto and a lot of hatred in his heart, but was stopped well short of the hotel ballroom where the event was held. Trump told Fox News that the suspect was a sick guy and that his family previously expressed concerns about him to law enforcement officials. The suspect, whom an official identified as Cole Thomas Allen of Torrance, California, was arrested at the scene of the event in Washington, D.C. When you read his manifesto, he hates Christians, Trump said on Fox News' Sunday briefing program. The manifesto was sent to Allen's family members shortly before the attack. The law enforcement official told Reuters the suspect called himself the friendly federal assassin, the official said. Turning the other cheek when someone else is oppressed is not Christian behavior. It is complicity in the oppressor's crimes, the manifesto read, according to the official. Targets listed in the manifesto included administration officials, although not FBI Director Kash Patel, prioritized from highest ranking to lowest, the official said. The manifesto mocked the insane lack of security at the Washington Hilton, where the dinner was held, the official said. Like the one thing that I immediately noticed walking into the hotel is a sense of arrogance, the manifesto's author reportedly wrote. I walk in with multiple weapons, and not a single person there considers the possibility that I could be a threat. The suspect traveled by train from Los Angeles to Chicago and then to Washington, acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche told NBC's Meet the Press program, adding that Trump and top members of his administration were likely the targets. Officials have said that the suspect fired a shotgun at a Secret Service agent at a security checkpoint in the Washington Hilton Hotel before being tackled and arrested. Trump, First Lady Melania Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, and other cabinet officials were rushed out of the dinner as the incident unfolded. The Secret Service agent who was shot escaped serious injury because the bullet struck his protective vest, Trump said. Trump, who boycotted the media gala in the past, requested the dinner be rescheduled within 30 days, adding that it was going to be an important event. The suspect will be charged Monday in federal court with assault of a federal officer, discharging a firearm, and attempting to kill a federal officer, Blanche said, adding he did not know if there was an Iran connection to the attack. Further federal indictments will be coming later, Blanche said. Saturday's incident came amid 0-0 in rising tide of political violence in the United States in recent years. Conservative political activist Charlie Kirk was shot dead at a rally last September, just months after the June 2025 slaying of Democratic Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband and the wounding of a Minnesota State Senator in June 2025. A Reuters Ipsos poll conducted in the days following Kirk's murder found that Americans believe that increasingly harsh rhetoric surrounding politics is encouraging violence in the U.S. Around the world, leaders condemned the attack and expressed relief that Trump and all present were safe. NATO leader Mark Rutte called the attack on our free and open societies, and leaders stressed violence had no place in democracy. Little was immediately known about the 31-year-old's alleged shooter's background, but social media postings suggested he was a teacher in Torrance near Los Angeles. Washington Interim Police Chief Jeffrey Carroll said the suspect was armed with a shotgun, a handgun, and multiple knives. A White House official said law enforcement officials who interviewed Allen's sister were told he had a tendency to make radical statements, had attended an anti-Trump No Kings protest, and referred to a plan to do something to fix issues with today's world. Allen purchased two handguns and a shotgun and stored them at his parents' home, the White House official said. A chaotic events from around 8:55 p.m. raised fresh questions about the security of top officials, many of whom were gathered in the hotel's expansive ballroom. The dinner was attended by many members of Trump's cabinet and other senior administration officials amid heavy security. It was the first time Trump attended the event as president, having boycotted it in previous years. Security personnel in combat fatigues stormed the stage, pointing rifles into the ballroom as Trump, his wife Melania, and Vice President J.D. Vance were evacuated. Cabinet members who had been sitting at tables dotted around the vast room were escorted out by their security details one by one. Our last article on the front page, preschool growth stalls. A new report from the National Institute for Early Education Research found Illinois' rate of growth in enrollment and funding for universal preschool is slowing despite state efforts to expand preschool programming. While the report noted Governor J.B. Pritzker's Smart Start initiative increased access in recent years, flat funding for the current year has stalled progress in the state. Pritzker introduced Smart Start Illinois in 2023, a program that aims to expand high-quality, publicly funded preschool programs to low-income children. In January 2025, Pritzker announced the addition of over 5,000 seats to the program, for a total of 11,000 since it began. Per the report, the state ranked fourth in three-year-old enrollment in the 2024-25 school year. However, it ranked 22nd in state funding and 20th for four-year-old enrollment out of all 50 states and Washington, D.C. over the past 5 years. Three-year-old enrollment in Illinois slowly increased to 26%, although it remains lower than enrollment for four-year-olds, which plateaued at 35%. Most state-funded preschool programs primarily serve four-year-olds, with nationwide enrollment reaching 37% for four-year-olds, but only 9% for three-year-olds. Illinois rises to the top of three-year-olds because most states aren't doing anything, and Illinois serves similar percentages of three- and four-year-olds, said the report's authors Steve Barnett and Allison Friedman Krause. Illinois has a two-year preschool program that targets both ages. During the 2024-25 school year, Illinois preschools enrolled about 83,000 children in total, an increase of over 1,000 students from the previous year. The report released Wednesday found that the state met 8 out of 10 quality benchmarks the Institute set for early childhood education in 2024-25. Illinois' rating was in line with the national trend. Enrollment and funding saw record highs, but the pace of growth in those categories slowed from the previous year. The governor's Smart Start initiative includes the Early Childhood Block Grant Program, which makes grants available for children in preschool deserts. The report found that Illinois' spending per child has increased to $6,641 over the past 2 years, reversing a decrease from 2021 to 2023. State spending increased 7% in total from the 2023-24 school year to the 2024-25 school year when adjusted for inflation, an increase of about 5% per child. The General Assembly allocated an additional $75 million for early childhood block grants in fiscal year 2025, but kept funding the same for the current fiscal year ending in June. Beginning in July, in fiscal year 2027, preschool grant programs will be housed under the new Department of Early Childhood. Lawmakers are working to finalize that budget by May 31st. It is partly about setting priorities. If you have a universal pre-K program and you're flat funding it, you're never going to get there, Barnett said. If it's going to happen, legislators may have to prioritize it over other things in their budget. The Institute defines true universal preschool as a program that does not have barriers to entry, like parental salary or education requirements. Indiana, for example, has a state-funded program, but the Institute doesn't count it because the program requires certain salaries and education levels from the parents of the child. There are 44 states and D.C. that have state-funded preschool programs, according to the Institute. It measures those programs through 10 benchmarks in areas such as early learning and development standards, curriculum supports, teacher and assistant teacher degrees, and training professional development, class size, staff-to-student ratio, health screening and referrals, and quality improvement systems. Illinois meets all benchmarks but those for staff professional development and assistant teacher degree requirements. Only six states met all 10. The benchmark can be a little clunky, the author said, because it's a yes or no question. A state might meet part of the requirement, but not all, and still miss the benchmark. It's worth looking at some of these to see if your state is close, Barnett said, adding that improvement is often driven by advocates and reports like this one. Legislators have a lot of things to worry about. They don't necessarily know this unless somebody points it out to them. Our next article, Man Accused of Box Cutter Attack, Decatur. It took a while, but police report they finally found and arrested a Decatur man accused of slashing a victim with a box cutter after becoming upset about being asked who was smoking cannabis, police report. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said Leon D. Jones, 56, was taken into custody April 20th and later charged with two counts of aggravated battery. He is accused of attacking a 52-year-old male victim on the morning of August 15, 2025, at the Oasis Day and Resource Center for Homeless People in the 200 block of West Cerro Gordo Street. The victim stated he got into a verbal argument with Leon Jones upon becoming upset with him for asking who was smoking cannabis while in the parking lot of the Oasis, the officer, Cody Rose, who signed the affidavit. Leon then displayed two folding box cutters, which were open. Leon then swung his right hand containing the box cutter towards the victim, at which time the victim had to raise his hand to block his face from being cut. At this time, the knife cut his left inner palm, causing an approximately 2-inch-long laceration, which required medical attention. Jones was arrested in Macon County Circuit Court April 21st and granted pretrial release with the condition that he stay away from the Oasis Day Center and has no contact with the victim. Our next article, Police Camera Captures Gunfight, Decatur. An apparent gun battle on the streets of Decatur was captured on surveillance camera footage, police report. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers had been dispatched to the intersection of East Olive and North Jasper Streets after 911 calls from residents who said they heard 10 to 20 gunshots around 9 p.m. Saturday. Camera footage was found that showed a subject walking through the intersection before ducking down and running eastbound, said Closen. The subject then turns and fires several rounds to the west and continues running. Gunshots are heard coming from different locations, so it appears as if maybe two individuals were shooting at each other. 9 spent shell casings were recovered by officers on the east side of the intersection. They were all 9mm caliber. Clausen said it was hard to say if the gunman seen in the camera footage had opened fire first or was returning fire after he had been shot at. No suspects have been identified. No arrests have been made. Clausen added, and officers found nothing that had appeared to have been damaged by bullets at the time. The initial investigation was conducted. Anyone with information can reach police at 217-424-2734 or contact Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Our next article, Crews Race to Save Sequoias. Wildfires killed nearly 20% of the world's giant sequoias. 5 years ago, a tragic and depressing environmental story unfolded when thousands of giant sequoia trees, an iconic California species that tower 300 feet high and can live for 3,000 years, were killed during multiple large wildfires that roared across the southern Sierra Nevada. The fires in 2020 and 2021 at Sequoia National Park, Sequoia National Forest, and other areas burned with unprecedented intensity, killing nearly 20% of the world's giant sequoias and exposing the growth vulnerability of the most massive trees on Earth. It was heartbreaking, said Kevin Conway, State Forest Programs Manager for CAL FIRE, the state's primary firefighting agency. You can't help but ask, what could I have done? What should I have done? Could I have prevented this? After the fires stunned scientists, park managers, and environmental groups formed a partnership to reduce the chances of similar catastrophic outcomes in the years ahead. Now, with another summer fire season looming, they say they are making encouraging progress. Since their efforts began in 2022, the partnership has thinned the overgrown brush and small trees that provide fuel for fires to burn, hotter than 44 of the 94 giant sequoia groves in California. Crews also conducted controlled burns and planted more than 682,000 sequoia seedlings in areas that burned severely in wildfires of 2020 and 2021. Altogether, their work has reduced fire danger on the 23,251 acres over the past 4 years, according to a new report issued earlier this month. It's a race against time, said Steve Mitz, the former superintendent of Redwood National Park, who recently became president of Save the Redwoods League, an environmental group based in San Francisco. It's not a matter of if, but when we will have more fires. We have the answers. We know what to do. It's not hopeless. The partnership, called the Giant Sequoia Lands Coalition, has 8 primary members that own land between Tahoe National Forest and Bakersfield, where the 94 groves of massive and ancient sequoias are located. They are CAL FIRE, California State Parks, the National Park Service, Tulare County, and Tule River Indian Tribe of California, UC Berkeley, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Federal Bureau of Land Management. Another 9 organizations are also included, providing scientific research, funding, and support. They are American Forests, the Ancient Forest Society, the Giant Sequoia National Monument Association, Save the Redwoods League, the Sequoia Parks Conservancy, Southern Sierra Conservancy, Stanislaus National Forest, the U.S. Geological Survey, and the Yosemite Conservancy. A cousin of the coast redwood, which is the world's tallest tree, giant sequoias are the largest living tree by volume on Earth. Decimated by logging in the 1800s and early 1900s, nearly all of the remaining groves are preserved on public land, with Yosemite National Park, Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park, Calaveras Big Trees State Park, and Sequoia National Forest. The trees evolved with fire, said Kristen Sheeve, a fuels and forest specialist with the University of California Cooperative Extension program at UC Berkeley. Giant sequoia cones have resin that needs fire to melt it to release seeds. Their spongy reddish bark can grow to 2 feet thick. It acts like insulation, protecting the tree's inner living tissue from heat. Fires from lightning and those set by Indian tribes typically burned through giant sequoia groves every 10 to 20 years before the gold rush of the 1850s. But starting about 100 years ago, efforts to fight wildfires began to make them more vulnerable to fire. When crews put out fires, it allowed small trees, brush, and dead wood to build up to unnaturally dense levels, Sheeve noted. Now, when wildfire flames enter the groves, they burn hotter and more intensely than ever before, with the potential to kill the ancient trees entirely. Those fires in 2020 and 2021 were a game changer, she said. We had thousands of acres of high severity fire. It was a shocking change and a hard one. We're going out to do surveys and seeing trees that had lived for millennia and had died due mostly to human mismanagement. It was a really hard pill to swallow. Another added stress is climate change. Hotter temperatures dry out soils and vegetation, making fires more severe. The drought of 2012 through 2016 and 2020 through 2022 killed millions of other trees in the Sierra, providing more fuel for fires. The solution, Sheeve and Conway said, is removing many of the overgrown smaller trees that surround the giant sequoias in dense thickets, like white fir, red fir, and incense cedar. Large sugar pines and ponderosa pines that died during the droughts are also removed with chainsaws. Much of the debris is piled and burned out of fire season. Some of the larger wood on private land or CAL FIRE-owned demonstration forests can be sold to lumber companies to offset the costs of thinning. After thinning, areas can be treated with controlled burns using techniques native tribes used for centuries, Conway said. Removing the extra material not only causes wildfires to burn less intensely and less hot, but it also allows more sunlight into the forest so giant sequoia seedlings have a chance to grow, he added. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, April 27th, 2026. Please stay tuned.